CliffCentral.com. All right. It is Tuesday. We are live. Dave Levinson's with us. Mesh is in the studio in Johannesburg, and we want to hear from you in the comments. You can also drop us a WhatsApp if you want to on 071-783-6214, especially if it's a voice note. And we'll play some of those from time to time. So drop us a voice note, 071-789-6214. While we got Dave here, I think we were talking just a moment ago about like population explosions and population decline and all that kind of thing. Someone threw this in, and it forces me to just reflect on something I heard last week at Davos. If we push Al Gore into an active volcano, says Slippery Pickle, I believe it will appease the gods and solve climate change. If not, we can try others like Greta. So Al Gore was at Davos. Now, Al Gore and his book, An Inconvenient Truth, which I've got somewhere in this room. There's a book of Al Gore.
Is that not a picture of a bookshelf behind you?
No, it's a real thing.
Man, you must be clever. You'll read all those books. My God.
So I've got Al Gore's book. He told us that by 2009, I think, Venice would be completely underwater. The polar ice caps will have melted. The sea will have risen. And just by the way, just drop some ice in a glass and see when the ice melts if the water level actually goes up or down. Idiot.
I don't have time to do that.
Anyway, the point
is. The drink is finished before.
Yeah, that's also a good point. But here's the deal, right? And Al Gore has just been a bullshit artist from day one. The fact that he still gets to stand up in front of crowds of people and they don't throw tomatoes at him is outrageous. This guy was talking at Davos last week and saying, the whole problem with the world is we're burning fossil fuels, blah, 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 which of course is a problem. We are burning fossil fuels and they're not necessarily good for the environment. But then he says this. He says, that's why the oceans are boiling. Now, I was in Cape Town for 3 days and I did see the ocean from Cape Town. And then I was in Durban for 3 days and I saw the ocean there. It's an Indian and Atlantic oceans, two different oceans. And neither of them were boiling. I just want to point that out. And we're in the middle of summer now. They're not in the Northern Hemisphere. So if there was any boiling to be done, it would have been Cape Town this week, for example, where it's been boiling hot in Durban as well. Anybody see the boiling oceans? Or is Al Gore just full of shit? Can we just agree that the former vice president of the United States has run out of juice? That he's
seen what he's getting paid for his foundation.
He gets a
royalty.
Well, of course, because people are paying him to keep talking this shit and destroying his own reputation. But honest to God, I mean, he has run out of the fossil fuels he wants us to run out of. He has nothing else to burn. He's throwing it all in the furnace now. The oceans are boiling. Who talks like that?
And then once again, the Simpsons predicted it. Did you ever see that episode where Lisa had to do her speech?
No.
And they were talking Al Gore thing. So she was on that ladder. You remember he had that massive giant ladder that he would walk up on the screen and he would show you that the graph is so big that it goes off the screen. So Lisa Simpson had to do it a lot. And then her little boyfriend that likes her was operating the ladder. So she kept going up and down and it fucked up her whole speech. But that means that the Simpsons already predicted then what they always do is that this whole thing is bullshit. Have you ever spoken to someone who's very knowledgeable about one thing?
Yeah.
You can't beat them. It often happens with fundamental Christians or something. They go, Dave, your problem is you don't go to church. You don't believe in God as your savior. And then you're like, okay, well, I like jungle oats. You know, I can't speak to you if you only have the one thing. That means I can't change your mind. I can't argue with you.
Yeah.
It's kind of, if you ever meet Scientologists, you ever meet someone who really likes lizards, you fucked. You can't. Flat earthers. You can't speak to them about heaven. What about others? Do you do other things? So that same thing. When you get a bee in your bonnet about one thing, you can become very famous for that thing.
Yeah.
Are you a Jordan Peterson fan, Gareth? Do you dig his vibe?
I've interviewed Jordan once before, and I was in communication with his daughter for a little while to try and get him back on the show, but I've sort of let it slide because, I mean, I think Jordan Peterson's doing amazing work, and I know he went through
I want you and him and me and Mash at a braai. Now, how hectic is that going to be at a braai?
No, he's always.
He has knowledge of. He has knowledge of that thing. So you say feminism, you say women's lib, you say population crisis, and he's in, bro. He's like he's ready to go at any point on that thing that he knows.
We need people like that. You've got to have somebody who can actually take on like dumb people and argue with them and beat them to death with the facts. You need that.
Because there's more of them. There's more of them.
Well, we live in a world where there's, you know, everybody now suddenly thinks that they have an opinion and that other people give a shit about their opinions. Like you post something on the internet now and a bunch of like complete nobodies with three followers start telling you, yeah, you're wrong. I'll tell you why you're wrong. Like what those people just need to be shut up with is a giant foot trampling right on their heads. I'm terribly sorry, but not everybody's opinion counts.
So when you meet these people, do you often think to yourself, like, they are so knowledgeable, but isn't it great to also know that they can also shoot the breeze and talk about something else, which I think is a great
idea. I mean, that's where I'm worried about, like, Jordan Peterson. I don't know if he'd be fun to have around. I mean, like, I think I'd rather be at a braai with you and Mash just because I think we'd also talk a bit of shit and we'd laugh a little bit.
Apparently, Einstein was like that. He was a fun dude to have around.
I think Jordan seems to me like he's very focused and there's not a lot of time for like bullshit and like frivolous, stupid fun. And I need a bit of frivolous, stupid fun. I'll be honest with you. So I think he'd be hard work. He'd be heavy lifting. Plus everyone would be, you know, on their best behavior intellectually because they'd be terrified that he'd call them out for using the wrong word or for saying something that wasn't true or for, just taking on a belief that they couldn't back up. I think people would be very nervous around him. And I don't think he'd be fun at a braai. I must be honest with you.
So put those people in columns. How did Al Gore get to that point where he's now getting paid $2 million a week on a royalty from a stage show that he did, essentially, which was a talk. It's an hour-long talk.
If I knew that, Dave, I would be the one being paid $2 million. And I would also, I'd also take on some bullshit cause and pretend it was true and try to sell it.
Don't you remember on talk radio for that day? So you'd be the topic for the day. You'd have to kind of quickly learn about it. That would become the topic. So someone said, I think the animals are being killed. And you're like, okay, let's go. Rhinos. You became a knowledgeable person for 7,000 things. And now you're being forced to, because you're doing this, you now have to know about this. This one thing. What do you know most about?
That's why I'm grateful that I had the career that I had in my 20s and 30s because I was forced to learn a little bit about a whole lot of things so that when I talk to people, I can have a really fun time because I've got just enough knowledge to kind of access the world of a specialist without actually knowing all the details. And then that specialist can teach me more when I talk to them. But I'm not
– You're open to new things.
Oh, all the time.
That's where the future, that's where the next round circle of knowledge is. I'm trying to tell my kid that. It's like there's stuff you don't know, which is the best part of not knowing.
If that ever changes, I hope you'll put a bullet in my head because by then, like you have to, if you're not curious, you don't want to keep learning. Mash, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to keep learning, but not everything is worth learning. That's also important. There's a very fine line that we have to stick to. Crossing that line, I'd say, on the other side is flat earth theory. I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos about this. Just flat earth is getting trashed. I really enjoy that. There's certain things that you really don't need to waste your time learning is basically what I'm saying because, you're just going to waste your time.
Have you ever been to a homeopath, Mash?
No, I've never been. What do they do?
Controversial. Well, they don't do anything. They just charge you and then they hum.
Just hum. Is it like, it's not like Reiki, is it?
So do you know that flat earth was originally a marketing idea where someone said, if you market something properly and you package it properly, you can get people to believe it. Oh. And they said, like what? So they got together in a club and said, let's think of the most controversial thing. And they came up with about 8 different things. But the flat earth was the cleverest one of them where they said, take something that isn't, just blatantly isn't true. Mm. And let's market it and see if someone comes. So all you do is you put up a thing on the wall and say, tomorrow we're discussing the flat earth. So 3 or 4 people came to the lecture. And after that, so it was in the late 70s, they said, well, let's go. Now it's a thing. So we forget that it was just a piss take. Mm. Marketing.
Is that true?
At a college going, marketing, that's how it happened. It was just, let's talk about it. Let's see if someone believes it.
That is true, Gareth.
They can't get it back to the actual details of the course, but it's almost like a little one of these, you know, these homeschool marketing places where you learn how to design or you learn internet or code. That's how small that school was. Let's discuss that. Let's make up a thing.
Do you think we should have like penalties built into false advertising. Like, you know, there are obviously, you know, that you're forced to take down an ad that is blatantly untrue. And if you advertise like a product that has certain ingredients, but it doesn't, then you obviously get sued. But if people make up like bullshit spin and marketing and they sell you bullshit and lies, do you think we should be able to have recourse against those people?
It's too many people though.
I don't think so, Gareth. I don't think so. I feel like if people are dumb enough to believe it, then it is their own problem. It's something they should be dealing with and they should be getting themselves educated, because some of the bullshit that's spinning out here, it is so damn ridiculous. It's so dumb that
as time goes, it either gets diluted or it becomes more concentrated. The Holocaust hoax. Have you spoken to those people that go, it was an advertising campaign. It never happened.
Yeah.
You look at it and you're like, how long ago was it? That wasn't long ago. That's in my grandparents' time.
Exactly.
So it's already been diluted where someone has written a book saying it was a marketing thing. This is how it happened. Now you speak to that person, you go, my God, what did I do here?
There are people who are like, oh no, 9/11 was all bullshit. None of those people died. Well, someone go and tell that family that are living without a dad. Yeah. You know, just go and tell them it was a bullshit story. I'd like to see
how do you find those people, because they believe it. It never happened. So you can't find them. So the same as saying to Pioneer Foods, because they all the Johnson & Johnson were putting asbestos in the baby powder. That's a real fine.
Yeah.
Yet it's still.
Ndipiwe says quite rightly that whole white monopoly capital thing, which was completely made up by Bell Pottinger. And even though it's been debunked and Bell Pottinger admitted they made it up as a bullshit thing, even though they did that, there are still people going around in South Africa, political leaders like Julius Malema, who are saying, oh no, white monopoly capital is a thing.
Mm. What happens in 30 years time when we are told to wear masks again? So my generation is going to say to those, so that kid hasn't been born yet. They're like going to be 5 or 6 or 7. They're going to wear masks. I'm going to say, guys, don't wear the mask. It's not going to change anything. They go, no, but we have to wear them. And you're like, no, let me tell you, back in 2019 in March. So they're going to say, granddad, you're fucking old. You're 80. What are you talking about? I'm like, let me tell you, they made up this thing and we all had to be locked in our houses. And that's why granddad lives with you.
Well, absolutely. Let me show you something quickly. We haven't done this for a while, but here is the lowest point in the medical fraternity's entire history. You know, we've always held doctors in high esteem. And if you think about it, when you got high marks at school, people immediately said to you, become a doctor, because that's a respectable profession. You'll earn good money. It's, you know, people will call
you. If you've got low marks, become a comedian.
Well, yeah. Or start a podcast or something. So here's what, let's just cast our minds back, because this wasn't so long ago. This is what doctors were doing. Serious medical professionals were doing 2 years ago. Just have a look and let's just all take in how embarrassing and how badly this is dated. Okay. Let's look at this. See how badly this has looked. I'm just going to stop it there because I can't watch that without being just so embarrassed for those people. These were serious medical people. And 2 years ago, that was what they were doing. And we were all going, clap for the NHS if you were in Britain.
I've seen the NHS riots now where remember they used to parade through the streets and clap for them. Now that they're going, hang on a minute, we're not getting any money. And they're like, oh shit, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a real dead body?
No, man. It was just such bullshit. So that was just when the pandemic had begun and everybody was like, pray for the doctors and the doctors are amazing. And look at the stupidity. I just want you to remember it, because it's only that, what, two years ago, and people have already forgotten what that was. It's dumb.
So do you remember in Durban or KZN, there was those riots in the warehouses and things. A lot of people were asking the guys, why are you at the riot? They didn't realize it was because of Jacob Zuma's trial or like you say, because of the school things. But when the guy was putting that big TV in the back of his Toyota Taz, there was no way that he was putting that TV in there because Jacob Zuma was in court.
Yeah.
It's just like Silent Innocent says, it's so cringy. Jerusalem Challenge says KB. You remember that? That was awful. Mongezi says super cringe. Yeah. Remember that? Oh my God. How absolutely abominable.
Well, Jerusalem Challenge wasn't that cringe.
No, so bad. So bad. All right. We got to move on to a couple of other things because Dave's only with us until 5:30. You wanted to vent about something, Dave. You wanted to talk a little bit about what the Soccer World Cup hoax.
No, it wasn't that. Did you watch that FIFA documentary? And something that made me realize that we give so much power to someone when they've got the right title. So I thought FIFA was 100 years old. It was invented now in like the late 60s. And do you remember when they came here in 2010? The streets were clean. Homeless people were gone. We weren't allowed to drink. We had to drink Pepsi and Budweiser. And it's like this powerful government.
Yeah, sure. Right.
And have you watched that documentary, how they sort of came about, the powerful thing?
I didn't. Why are you like, you're a bit late, Dave. I mean,
I am a bit late, but I watched that other one, the one in Saudi Arabia. And also, it just made me angry just watching this thing. They built this tower of the people that had died making the stadium. The tower is higher than
Dave. It's
so weird.
It's in the past, Dave. It's like the, you
for
know,
sure,
it's like,
but I don't, it's not good. It's going to come back. It's cringy. Imagine saying to someone, what are you doing? Like, I built a stadium. Where's my dad? Well, he died building the stadium, but they made a tower.
God. All right, so you're still upset.
My biggest gripe was the wokeness, because I have young people coming to my shows, and a lady came to me afterwards, and she, I would say young, maybe 19, and she said, I can't put my finger on it, but I feel that your joke was racist. So I said, well, it either is or it isn't.
Oh, wow. She feels that, huh?
Yeah, I feel what she said was, I think I'm offended. That's what she said afterwards. She said, I can't put my finger on it, but I think I'm offended.
But I don't know why.
And, did you pretend to care?
No, but as you get older as a comedian, your skin is so thick you don't care anymore, because you're not really – once I've done the joke, I'm out.
Yeah.
I really don't know enough. If you ask me three more questions after that joke, I wouldn't be able to tell you anything. I saw the headline. We're the headline people, so we see the thing.
Are you worried about when people film your shows and then they take something out of context, which has happened to so many
people? That's going to happen. That's going to happen anyway. That's in the cancel culture of it. So I'll ask people, say, look, if you film me, put the whole thing on. Don't just put half of it on.
Yeah.
So I spoke about a thing once. A journalist came into a show about 2 hours late, saw me on stage. And if I'm the headliner, that means I'm the last act. But her review was of the whole show. So that means that her friend had told her, well, Louisa was on, and then so-and-so was on, and this, and then Dave was on. But she saw me talking about a guy who had put clitorises in his fridge in Bloemfontein or something, and he was in court for having – so it's female mutilation story. It's not hilariously funny. But by the time she walked in there, I was on to the funny part of the story. So I tell the truth about, listen, this guy's in court. He's got clitorises in his fridge. And then she walks in afterwards when I'm doing my callback. You understand how comedy works. You've got to have your callback and your setup.
Sure.
Yeah. So she goes, Dave Levinson's crude and he's all just toilet humor. And he was disgusting talking about clitorises in the fridge. So I'm like, well, look it up. That really happened. The guy's in jail now for doing that. And he was operating an illegal female mutilation.
It was in Bloemfontein, wasn't it?
Well, he's Belgian or something. I don't want to do the whole story, but the fact is, as you said, if she had been filming that, she would have only seen the joke about it. It does get quite cut out of hand where if you put clitoris in your fridge, you've got to burp the lid.
Just quickly to be serious for a second, because you're going shortly, but do you feel like comedy, also comedians are tiptoeing around this wokeness because they're shit scared of being canceled?
Do you know Justin Nurse from Laugh It Off when he got into trouble for the t-shirts with SAB? We wrote a play for Grahamstown that never happened, where this is 2003. We wrote a play where jokes became illegal. So you couldn't tell a joke. You couldn't even do something that was funny because the police around you, sort of Nazi, kind of sort of Pink Floyd-y leather jackets would come and take you away. And the comedians disappeared. They started disappearing. So what happened was these underground clubs formed and that was the premise of the play. That's happening. And I'm looking at Justin and this play should have been out, because what happened is there were underground clubs and you couldn't even do knock-knock jokes. So if you know when some people come to your door and they go, knock-knock, you know, and you're like, and then you would get arrested because they're like, what are you doing? Are you doing a knock-knock joke? So the policing became from the people policing you. There was no need for police, because if you told a joke, you say, hey man, this guy walks into a bar. Well, is he Muslim? Is he Greek? Is he French?
And that's happening now. That's already happening.
So, as a comedian, I'm pretty fucked with that, because I'm quite crude and I have no filter, which makes me funny.
Isn't that why there are no comedy clubs?
Possibly. So COVID also killed the funny.
No, but I mean, if you think about it, like, people are desperate to laugh because they love laughing, and laughter is one of the best things for sorting out your mental health, for making you feel physically better, to get you out there and mix with other people. Laughter is how you know you're with friends.
So where do people get their laughter from these days? If you watch someone on their phones, what are they watching? They're watching reels.
But this is my point.
You've seen how they scroll through those reels.
I reckon that if you owned a comedy venue and Dave Levinson comes along and he says something which some woke idiot doesn't like, and they then decide that they're going to go after Dave Levinson, but they also go after the comedy venue, you know, why would you take that risk as a comedy venue? You're like, I don't want to be wrapped up in letting 10 guys or girls a night stand up there and say whatever's on their mind. And then I get like shut down as a venue because these guys are saying something.
Never got involved in your content. He would come to you after and say, listen, you went over time. That was literally what he would say to you. He'd never, ever said, I didn't like what you said.
You think someone on Twitter knows that there's a line there? They don't. They think it's the same thing.
No, we've got to cancel Dave, but we've also got to close down that venue because they hosted Dave.
The venue. Yeah. So there's 40 jobs of waiters and waitresses. And
a platform. Yeah. They shouldn't have given Dave a platform.
Oh, Davey. Yeah.
So I don't think my stuff is on a woke level yet, because I really do. You've seen my – I don't know if you've seen my comedy. I talk absolute shit. There is nothing – if you've taken my comedy seriously, you weren't listening. Because it comes from – my sense of humor comes from my uncle telling the most weirdest dad jokes and my gran who thought farts were funny. So that's my sense of humor. But no, I've seen some comedians who say something.
You know, Dave, we get you on the show because you're so highbrow. You know, that's what we want.
If you take that cancel culture, comedians are going to be the front line. But then there should be way more people saying really hectic things, going, well, how did you cancel John Smith there for doing his thing when he said that thing on the beach? Or where are those two guys in Clarksdorp who beat up those two little guys that wanted to swim? That's your cancel culture. But then everyone goes, it's a sounding, it's the influence around them. That's what caused it. You know, if I speak to someone who's a racist now and I'm like, but you're 20. You weren't even here during a party. Where are you getting this from?
Mm. I'm in Dave. And Oma and Opa. Yeah.
Dave Zo, please don't let him take that picture from the Just Now Comedy Podcast. We're taking it with us to the new studios. And it's good to have you there before we move, dude. And
I'm taking this.
You can take the little sample.
It is actually mine. We used to have Breakfast Beer Club. I don't know if you remember.
I'm so glad I don't remember. We'll catch up with you soon, and good to see you, Dave. Always good. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Always good. Thanks, guys. Cheers. Goodbye, Mesh.
Okay. Cheers, Dave.
Goodbye, Ryan.
The great Dave Levinson. What a guy. He is. It's terrific. Listen to him laughing like he doesn't know it's true. All right. So listen, you know Phil Kutzer. You've known him from probably about 2.5 years ago already when we started talking to him from DeWitt Motors, and that is in none other than Mpumalanga. If you haven't been out in Mpumalanga and you haven't bought a beautiful car from him and you have the money in your pocket, what the hell are you doing? But we'll talk to you in a moment about what's going on with Phil and what's going on with Mercedes-Benz, which is obviously what they sell at the DeWitt Motors dealership. But we're also going to bring to you this morning the CEO of Mercedes-Benz South Africa, co-CEO Mark Rain. He's also executive director at Mercedes-Benz Cars. I'm thrilled to have him on with us this morning. But first of all, Phil, how are you doing?
Morning, Mesh. Morning, Gareth. How are you guys?
Nice to see you, Phil. Been a while.
Excellent. Been a while, yes. Yeah. Compliments of the season, if we're still allowed to say that.
So, I know. I was going to say to you, if we're allowed to say that. Happy New Year, then Happy New Year. And Mark Rain, what a pleasure to have you on. Good to see you, Mark. Can you hear us?
Hi, Gareth. Thank you for having me on the show. Happy New Year.
Very good. Very, very good. Nice to see you both.
Okay.
Right. Perfect. Perfect. There's a little bit of a delay, but it's not the end of the world. So let's just give a little bit of background here. Mark joined Mercedes-Benz in 2002 and started his career overseas at the sales planning department. After that, various stations. I mean, you're the youngest co-CEO in Mercedes-Benz history or something, aren't you?
I'm not sure, but in comparison to my peer group, I'm certainly on the younger generation in terms of the CEOs in Mercedes-Benz globally. And
well, I'm
very happy to be back in South Africa.
All right, we got a bit of a delay there. Let's just see. I want to ask Ryan if he can just try and sort out Mark's connection in the meantime. So Phil, we've also got to catch up with you because we've got to talk about plenty of the things that have been happening in the car industry, and we'll talk about all of those in just a moment or two. But first things first, are people buying cars, Phil, and are people buying and selling cars, most importantly?
Yes, sure, Gareth. I think, you know, one of the CEOs also once said, the sun will rise and the sun will set and people will buy cars. So I guess we just need to go on. Obviously, we had some obstacles in the last couple of years with you're all aware of the semiconductors and so forth. But touch wood, I think most of that has been resolved. Absolutely. So, yes, we're going on and we're positive and we're looking forward to 23. Yeah.
All right, Mark, let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all, I believe we are building the C-Class in South Africa, and you guys have spent an enormous amount of money and investment in South Africa. This is something worth boasting about. So tell us about Mercedes-Benz in South Africa and what your involvement is.
We are very proud of the state-of-the-art production plant in South Africa, in East London. We've invested over the last years in order to make it basically benchmark globally, and the C-Class is being exported to all countries around the world, including China. And especially we can produce the entire product portfolio of the C-Class, including diesel, petrol cars, hybrids, our latest additions, our performance luxury cars, our AMGs. And that really makes us proud out of Africa for the world.
Is that, I've heard the number between 8 and 11,000 units a month. Is that correct?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. In December, we exported over 11,000 units out of the East London plant. And we have actually these capacities installed to cater for the entire world in terms of C-Class demand.
That's phenomenal. I mean, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, well, South Africa is not a great investment destination. And yet there are companies like Mercedes-Benz who are investing an enormous amount of money. And I think that that's a very, very positive thing. It's something we should be very proud of as South Africans.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got a long legacy in the country. And our East London plant has been there for over 60 years. We really cherish this legacy. And together with our partners also in our South African market, like, for instance, the Ritz Motors.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I met you through Phil. We actually met at Mercedes-Benz office here in Pretoria. Phil and Mark, how does it work between the dealers and Mercedes-Benz head office? Just from the point of view of clients and people who are buying cars, how exactly does the relationship work? Mark, you start, and then Phil, you can fill in the gaps.
I mean, I've been in many countries around the world, and the partnership between us, Mercedes-Benz South Africa and Network in South Africa, is particularly strong. We call it the spirit of the partnership, and you can basically cross a bridge if you've got this strong relationship. And that has been built over years, and since I've been in the market, I'm trying to continue that and extend that even. And it works on close-knit communication, on exchange and alignment, bringing everybody to the table and to the party in order to ensure that we find the best solutions. And it's also defining a common strategy, which always looks at a customer centricity and a market adequate approach to South Africa. And we're very proud of that and continuously working on that.
Yeah, Phil, I mean, you obviously come through to Pretoria often, because that's when I get to see you. And you're often in meetings with Mark. I mean, this is the kind of partnership that makes it better for customers. It makes it easier for customers. And you guys are in the same business because you're trying to sell cars, right?
100%. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we've got similar goals at the dealer network and Mercedes-Benz South Africa. We want to sell more cars and keep our customers happy in the Mercedes-Benz family. So there's a lot of manufacturers where they will treat the dealer network in more of a dictatorship attitude. And this is not only because Mark is here, but this is not the case with Mercedes-Benz South Africa. As Mark mentioned, our slogan is the spirits of the partnership. And it's as we work together, I mean, this is obviously the most desired synergy we can both wish for. So I believe that the communication should be open between the network and the manufacturer, and everybody can speak up to embrace the common goal at the end of selling more cars and keeping our customers happy.
So Phil, while I'm talking to you, how does it work when you place an order for a vehicle?
So yes, Gareth, yeah, it's quite a detailed process, But to make it easy, I mean, there will be vehicles in stock, which is on the showroom floor, as you can see in the back. Those vehicles will be available immediately. So someone can phone in or walk in and purchase a vehicle. Then obviously, if the vehicle's not available, the exact vehicle you need, you can place a back order with us, or we've got stock arriving, I will say monthly or bi-monthly in the country where we can also pick from. Then if you desire a specific vehicle, the waiting time is probably between 3 and 6 months, depending on your optional extras, where the factory or the manufacturer is based for that specific model. So in other words, it will take a little bit longer to get a vehicle that's manufactured in Tuscaloosa in USA than the C-Class that's manufactured in East London. So yeah, that's more or less how it works. And then I can go in detail into the system, but I think it's going to bore everyone.
So Mark, what about the Mercedes brand? I mean, when we talk about ordering a car, you know, if someone wants a Mercedes, they've probably decided that already. And then they'll go online and they'll look at it and they'll play with the different options of what kind of interior, exterior, what sort of extras. It really is a luxury experience, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, we're very proud of our legacy, being the inventor of the automobile and probably having the strongest luxury brand in the automotive industry. And as Phil has already alluded to, the personalization and the customization of the cars to meet the exact demands and requirements of our customer is key. And that's why we carry, on the one hand, such a wide portfolio, but also give the opportunity to our customers to really define and customize their own personal Mercedes-Benz to their liking. And it is an experience, and everybody, I mean, you don't buy a car every day, and especially in the luxury segment, it's a big decision, and it's an emotional attachment for most people. And guiding the right vehicle is important, and that's why we also invest a lot together in our people, in our salespeople, in our product experts, in order to consult to them the right car. And we take great pride in that, and also making sure that we have the best solutions for our customers in all aspects.
Wow. What I love, and I can speak here from experience, is I've driven a number of these cars. I mean, Phil, fill in again. I'm using Phil as the joke here. Fill in where I've left anything out here. But we've got I've driven the GLE, I've driven the GLC, I've driven the X Class, which is also very cool. And people don't know the Buckies are there. You got the C Class. I'm currently driving a C Class AMG. I remember when we went on that advanced driving course at Swartkop. Do you remember that, Phil?
That's right, yes, yeah.
Then I also drove a GLS, I didn't drive the Maybach, but I got into it. I drove the EQC, which is amazing. It's the electric car. A GT63 AMG, which is like my favorite car of all time. And I think we also drove the A45 and the C63. So, I mean, just absolutely amazing cars. Amazing. So I've pretty much been through your range there, Mark, and I can tell you, it's superior in every way.
Well, Mark, Gareth still needs to drive the current or newly launched EV range or EQ range. So I think that's next on the cards. I mean, we had our dealer conference now last week, Wednesday, Thursday, and I mean, obviously we've got the whole range there from EQA to EQS.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm so excited about those products. Yes.
Didn't you just drive the EQS?
100%. Yeah, Mark didn't know, so we can't actually talk about this. So I just took the EQS. It's the 53 AMG just around the block, and it's unreal. Wow. I mean, it's 950 Newton meters, and I've never driven anything like this before. So, 4MATIC, so you don't have the ESP problem or where the wheels will slide in the back. It's unreal.
Phenomenal.
Sure.
Mark, what are you driving at the moment, Mark? I mean, when people ask you as the CEO of Mercedes-Benz South Africa, what do you drive? Do you drive different cars every week?
I'm obviously in the fortunate situation that I can drive our entire portfolio. At the moment, my car of choice is the S-Class. It's our pinnacle of the luxury. It's the top of the range. I'm waiting, actually, that we get a few more EQS in the country that I can switch over to the EQS, because I'm a huge fan of electric cars and especially our EQ range. The demand has been so great on the EQs that unfortunately I had to pass on my allocation to a fortunate customer. But I mean, I remember, Gareth, when we met for the first time and you just took delivery of your new C-Class, the excitement you had. And for instance, yeah. The C-Class, which is locally produced, we call the baby S-Class because it's basically the S-Class just in slightly look in the same value and has the same features. If you look at our entire range, if it's our Mercedes-Benz, if it's our Mercedes-AMGs, our Mercedes-Maybach, Mercedes-EQ, they all have their distinct features and benefits, and that makes it so exciting and why people are so passionate about it as well.
Listen, I have to tell you all, Mash, you'll love this too. I was at my little nephew's birthday last night, and it's just down the road here. We went to the nearest restaurant, and he's just turned 9, but his little brother is 6. And he said, "Can't you give me a lift home, the little brother?" So I took him home in your C-Class, Phil. And you can change the color of the interior, right? Now, it's a little thing. I mean, it's probably something adults shouldn't even talk about. But this little kid was blown away by the fact that I would go, "Hey, Mercedes." And then the car would go, "How can I help you?" And I go, "Change color to purple." And then this little kid's eyes virtually popped out of his head. Now, his dad has driven all kinds of really exciting cars, but he was more blown away by this than anything else. And it's little things like that, I suppose, that do make the difference. You talk about the C-Class being like a mini S-Class. You don't feel like there's any luxury that's missing while you're driving this thing. It's a phenomenal feat of engineering, first of all, to produce cars that are this reliable, this fuel efficient, it has to be said. Right, Phil? I mean, that's one of the things that really impressed both of us.
100%, yeah. So this is why we're excited that the Mini S-Class is manufactured in South Africa. And we are planning to sell quite a bit this year. And it's if you've driven the vehicle, I mean, road silence, I mean, luxury, you would know the we call it the MBUX, the media interface and the screens and so forth, touch screens. It's high-end tech. So yeah. We love it. And the fuel consumption, are you driving the diesel as well, I believe?
Yep.
I can't remember.
Yep.
Yeah, your fuel consumption of diesel is phenomenal as well. So that's also one of our main selling points.
Okay, so Mark and Phil, when people buy cars these days, we know that a lot of people are buying them online, but a lot of people like to actually go into the dealership and kick the tires and check out the car and do a test drive. What sort of trends are we seeing there? Mark, what do you think is happening in the world where, you know, customers can buy from anywhere, for anywhere? I mean, Phil has customers all over the country, even though he's based in Ermelo.
I mean, it's about accessibility and customer convenience. I mean, we now all live in this omni-channel digital world where we expect everything to be right there, right then. And we've catered to that because especially our customers are mostly very separate time. So making sure that we cater for them in the best possible way is important. And I always say that the virtual digital channel online, so every customer can go see dealers like Phil and really experience the all the glory of our Mercedes-Benz touch and feel and really get that product experience. Also for us, it's very important that customers actually test drive the vehicles at our dealership in order to make an educated right choice. But having the opportunity and the convenience to research and to look at cars from the comfort of your home, from your couch, and then also potentially purchase from home is very, very important. And we call that an omni-channel strategy, which we've defined together with our network here in South Africa, that it's not exclusive, but really complementing each other.
Yes, and yes, Mark. And obviously, so I think one of the things that made the online journey easier or possible is the model that we've moved onto, which is called the net pricing model. We as South Africa is proud to say that we are the first country to launch the agency model where the vehicles we carry at the moment is on consignment. So we don't own the vehicles. The vehicles are owned by Mercedes-Benz South Africa. And that's more or less the model, if I could put like an iPhone, where an iPhone will cost you 15,000 Rand on either the Takealot, Incredible Connection, iStore, and so forth. That's more or less the model we've got in South Africa with Mercedes-Benz. And that's also making the omni-channel that Mark referred to, or the online journey possible, where you can get the vehicle at any dealership for more or less the same price, or for exactly the same price, for that matter.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, your website's looking very sexy there, Phil. Davids.co.za, if you want to go and check that out too. You can go and see all the cars that Phil has in stock at the moment. And if you want something, they can always find it. All right, so Mark, let's just talk for a second about what's going in the future, because you mentioned EVs, and this is obviously a big part of your strategy for Mercedes-Benz, both internationally and here. First of all, how does it work between you and Germany in terms of, like, when it comes to decisions, orders, all of that kind of thing? How much autonomy do you have here, knowing this market better than they can know there? But also, What's the story with EVs? They're obviously hugely popular all over the world, but what does it look like market-wise here in South Africa?
I mean, next to our brand, the product which we have are the core of everything we do, because, I mean, obviously the product fascinate our customers, and that's why the buying decision they make. And we're very proud because we've defined together with our network here in South Africa a strategy, and an integral part of it is the product offensive. And last year, we launched 9 vehicles to South Africa, so really pushing boundaries for the South African market. And 4 of those were our new Mercedes EQ range, with the EQB, the EQC, and the EQS, which EQS being the equivalent to the S-Class in the electric vehicle range from Mercedes-Benz. And you mentioned you've driven the EQC. I'm actually gutted, because I need to invite you to drive all the others, because once you get into those cars, you love your C-Class, but you probably wouldn't want to switch back. The driving experience of electric vehicles is just on another. It has, on the one hand, all the luxuries and all the features which you're used to from Mercedes-Benz, but the electric vehicle driving is just mind-blowing and out of this world. Phil said he sneaked himself into an EQS last week. I've been fortunate enough to test our entire portfolio. It's just, it's superb. And last week, we brought the newest electric vehicle from Mercedes EQ to the market, which is the EQE, which probably you can say it's our luxury limousine. It's probably one size. And we're very excited. We're pushing that agenda forward. We believe that's really the future of the automotive industry. E-mobility is taking the world by storm. We're going to launch another 2 electric vehicles this year, the EQS SUV and the EQE SUV, which we're very proud, because the SUV trend in South Africa is really gaining momentum. And right. I mean, I need to address the elephant in the room. Everybody asked me, well, in South Africa, how can you think about electric vehicles? And I'm personally actually so convinced that for South Africa especially, electric vehicle makes sense. Because many, especially in the Mercedes-Benz segment, many customers have either gone off the grid or are thinking about going off the grid. And then electric vehicle driving, or e-mobility as we call it, makes so much more sense, because you actually save so much money per month while having also that superior driving experience.
Yeah.
Well, the last word on this, Phil, it looks like there's always action at the dealership, and you're there bright and early this morning, so there are going to be people pouring in. So just tell us quickly, if you've heard anything this morning that made you think, this is the perfect time. It's January. It's a new year. It's time for a new car. It's time for me to trade in something old and get something new. Maybe you heard something that Mark said and it made you excited about a particular model. How do we get hold of you, Phil, and how can people place their orders from anywhere in South Africa?
Sure. Yes. Thanks, Gareth. No, yeah, they can visit it on our website. It's dewits.co.za, or they can phone me personally. My contact details are also on the website, so they're more than welcome to phone me on my cell phone or send me an email. I'm I'm available 24/7. Yeah.
Fantastic. Mark, good luck. I mean, it's a really, really big job that you've got running such an important brand in South Africa. We're thrilled that you are at Mercedes-Benz, such believers in this country, that you've got factories, that you've made investments, that you're making one of the most beautiful cars in the world right here from top to tail. And I hope that we'll see more of you, and good luck to you for the rest of this year. I hope it's going to be a really successful one for both of you, Phil and you, Mark.
Thanks, Gareth. Thanks, Mesh.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. I'd like what Philip has said. Come visit at our showrooms and test drive all our new fantastic products.
Marvelous. Thank you so much. There's Mark Rain, who's the co-CEO of Mercedes-Benz South Africa, Phil Kutzer from DeWitt Motors, and lots of car info for those people who can't get enough. And it's always good to check in with those two. I mean, I met Mark a while ago, and I said to Phil, why don't we just get him on the show with us? And he's like, I can make that happen. And look at it. Mm. Made it happen. So listen, we've got lots of stuff to do in this week. We're moving offices, and I'm very excited to take you on a tour of the new offices as soon as we're there. But we're also in the studio for the last time on Thursday morning for the Burning Platform. So stick around for that with Pumi. As always, we'll try and bring you the most interesting and insightful guests on all kinds of things, including news, including current affairs, including, I don't know, nonsense with Dave Levinson, and cars with Mark Rain and Phil Kutzer. So we try to bring you a good mix of everything. Right, Mash?
I must say, Gareth, now I kind of want a Mercedes. I kind of do now. Yeah, you know what? I will make it happen. I'm manifesting it right now.
Mercedes.
Yay. My family is going to be like born, and now we want 200K black tax. If I can come with that, but
it's going to be the black tax on that car is insane, but you have driven with me before. So you've seen what it looks like inside.
Yes. Yes. It is. It's like a spaceship. It is just an experience, I'm really excited. I'm really excited to get into one.
I was thinking, I'm sure you'll agree with me, that like people are so obsessed with the outside of a car and how it looks. And I'm one of those people. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm no petrol head. I can't have a conversation with George Meany where I'm like, you know, toe to toe with him in the discussion around the car. There are lots of other people. Jonathan Witt, I know, is a major car fan. And you talk to some people about cars and they get into the technicalities and the specifics. I mean, Phil was talking about that EQS and how it goes at how many, I don't know, 1,000 Newton meters. I don't know what that means. But what I know is when I'm sitting in a car and driving it, and it feels to me like, A, it can go where it needs to go. It's consistent. It's reliable. It's safe. It's comfortable. I mean, what more do you want?
I mean, all that matters for me in a car, to be honest with you, Gareth, it is the way it looks, and also the comfort. You're paying for comfort. I always say money buys you comfort these days. The more money you have, the more comfortable you are. The S-Class, the EQS. I was actually watching a YouTube video about the EQS the other day, and the comfort features in this car with that, they call it a hyper screen in the car, where the screen just stretches across the whole dashboard, and your passenger has their own screen as well. And the seats are massaging. They're ventilated. Just comfort. That's all I need. That's all I need. My car can actually look like a piece of crap on the outside if I want to go for some piece of crap, but comfort. That's what it's all about.
All right. Well, we got lots more exciting stuff to tell you this week about the new move, about the new studios. I'm going to be checking in there just a little bit later on to make sure that everything's on track. But we'll be busy, busy, busy. So we got to go.
Yeah.
We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Mash, thank you very much. I know you didn't get a word in edgewise with Dave this morning and me, and we were in full flight. And then we had Phil and Mark. So it's been pretty crazy. But we will see you tomorrow, and have an awesome Tuesday, everybody. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Ciao. CliffCentral.com.